Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Okay, let's continue. Migration patterns of Bigfoot. Alexander, if they were traveling en masse, wouldn't we see some of that?
Yeah, I personally don't believe that there's a migrational route in terms of, let's say, a Sasquatch moving from Pennsylvania to Florida through the Appalachian Mountains in a season. I think that's extremely far-fetched in my view. There's some people that believe that. I'm not knocking that. I just don't think it's likely. I think likely what's going on, and this is all just postulating, this is not really based on any solid evidence, of course, but is that Sasquatches that, let's say, live in the northern Appalachian Mountains, they would kind of be in that area. And they may have routes that they migrate into just a few mountain ranges away or, you know, within 100 miles or so, let's say, just because of food resources. Maybe in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, they're following the elk who move up higher in elevation in the summer and lower in the winter. Maybe it has to do with seasonality. Maybe in Florida, in the swamps, they wouldn't have to move at all because year-round they have pretty consistent weather and food. So I think it just depends on the region. Alaska is an interesting one. And why go through the trouble to get up to Alaska? I think it's an incredible part of the world. There's nothing really like it. And I think the possibility of something like Sasquatch being there is absolutely prime. I mean, there's more than enough space to support a few Sasquatches in a place like Alaska, which is so sparsely populated and so wild. And in Alaska specifically, that case I talked about, Area A, where we got to go, that's a unique situation I found myself in where I know the property owner and I have access to this area that essentially nobody else is going into to contaminate it, in the sense that, let's say you're investigating a national forest or a state park, it's somewhere in the lower 48, that's kind of well known in the Bigfoot circles. Well, you know, maybe one day this research group goes there, 2 weeks later you've got another research group, and they're finding evidence of that other research group and saying, we found Bigfoot footprints, and they're using the same areas, so you have the idea of contamination from other sources is huge, whereas a location like this that's over an hour boat ride from a small town in the middle of nowhere, Alaska, is as remote as you can get within reason, that allows you to actually go out to a location and know you're not, if there's somebody else there with you, you will know that they're there because you will physically see them coming in a boat or a plane. So you have this unique situation to kind of eliminate, other than yourself being a contaminant, other people being an outside kind of influence that can create something that, you know, may result in you thinking you have evidence or whatever. So I think that location, you know, just building kind of a personal relationship with the owner and being able to be in that situation and document, I think, is a really big chance for me. And I think that's why we went last year, and that's why I ended up going back to Alaska this year, while also expanding into other areas of Alaska, working with other local Bigfoot researchers up there, which was really neat. So, you know, it's an opportunity of a lifetime, of course, for me, and I'm not complaining at all, but being able to tell those stories is wonderful. Again, I think it comes back to being in that kind of unique situation. I think with a lot of the topic of Sasquatch, there's these particular either properties or cases, very remote areas where you have sort of ongoing years of activity that might be indicative of either curiosity or trying to get people off the area, out of the area. And I think that's kind of the case with this Area A place. There's been a few other cases like that throughout sort of the history of the Sasquatch topic. So I think that's a prime example of being in kind of one particular area, obviously in a place like Alaska where you've got millions of acres. But here you've got one area with ongoing potential activity. So why not try to focus there and try a few tricks up your sleeve and see if anything sticks?
You ask about window areas.
You know what? Let's consider that, too. We've been talking about potential window areas that seem to have a higher percentage, higher degree of paranormal activity. But if Bigfoot, you know, goes with the flow and migrates to the areas that are suitable for its environment, wouldn't that work against window areas that have them in a specific place?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. Personally, you know, my involvement with so-called window areas, or a lot of people call them triangles, because that's sort of popularized by the Bermuda Triangle and later on by Lauren Coleman calling the Bridgewater Triangle in Massachusetts the Triangle after the Bermuda Triangle. That's an area I've gone to quite a bit, the Bridgewater Triangle. I think when you look at Sasquatch, I personally think it's some sort of a flesh and blood hominid or hominin type creature. But I think you look at where the sightings are distributed, and this is what's great with a lot of the sightings when you have a database, such as the Bigfoot Mapping Project or something else. You have just a massive sighting, so you start to see patterns. Whereas an individual sighting, you may get, okay, you know, that's cool, it's great, but imagine getting 20 sightings and you start plotting them on a map. Well, they're all happening in a certain area. And what we notice with Sasquatch sightings is they tend to happen in areas that have a lot of wilderness, towns very close to the edges of the civilization, so to speak, in terms of wilderness. They're not happening in small forested sections of Brooklyn or major urban areas. The sightings closely align with where other animals inhabit, black bear or moose or mountain lions or other creatures. So you have that pattern. But some of these window areas, like the Bridgewater Triangle, it does have some wooded areas. I think in the past, before the kind of built-up urbanization, would have been suitable perhaps Sasquatches to pass through the area. At least we theorize, because you have a lot of these areas, like the place in Pennsylvania I mentioned earlier in the show where I had my UFO sighting. There's a lot of Sasquatch sightings all around that area because you've got rural areas, tons of woods, farmland, easy food. So you may have more than one thing going on at the same time. I don't know necessarily it's all connected. I know a lot of people kind of like to think it is with high strangeness. I personally don't know. I think it's possible that, you know, you may see something strange glowing in the woods, but then have a Sasquatch sighting. Does that mean they're connected? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But I think it may be partially coincidence that you have some of these areas that have Sasquatch sightings and other things going on, because then you'll have an area that doesn't have any, a lot of the other weirdness going on, but plenty of Sasquatch sightings. So which one is it, right? Is it one? Does it all have to be connected, or is it multiple things going on at the same time? I mean, just that UFO I saw in Pennsylvania, there was nothing Sasquatch-like about that encounter, so I don't consider it connected to any potential Sasquatch activity going on in that area. But yeah, the concept of window areas is interesting. Again, I mentioned the Bridgewater Triangle. That's one I've had a chance to go to. It's probably one of the more well-known at this point in the whole world. It's a very fascinating story because not only do you have Bigfoot sightings, you have other strange creature sightings, you've got a lot of the more ghost paranormal kind of stuff. You've also got real world crimes and true crime kind of stuff with cult activity or alleged cult activity, as well as gangland murders and just horrific actions by, I think, the true monsters, which are not Sasquatch, which are humans, in my opinion, which time and time again, our humans are the real monsters, right? So you've got all that muddled into one area, like the Bridgewater Triangle, and it kind of it becomes its own entity. It takes on its own kind of urban myth status, and the Bridgewater Triangle is a place that people go to try and get scared while walking through the Freetown State Forest or find a creature in the Hockomock Swamp. They kind of take on a life of their own, whether or not there may have been some real occurrences there, which in the case of the Bridgewater Triangle with real murders, absolutely there were. UFO sightings, everything, it kind of becomes its own entity and then takes on to its own status, whether it's in our heads or not. It's still something semi-tangible, I'd say.
I think of that in the sense of UFO flaps, where lots of people see UFOs for a while, and I wonder in part if that's just the effect of a cause. We have a UFO sighting that gets some kind of publicity. People looking up in the sky and they see something, or they get in on the act, and we have a flap and it goes on for a few weeks and a few months, and then it's gone. The question being, were there really more UFO sightings there, or just more people to see them? And I'm wondering if window areas are in part the same thing, where stuff attracts people, and that brings more eyeballs, and if things are going on, more eyeballs will report things.
Well, yeah, that's a great point, I think, about, you know, these flaps. That's happened with Bigfoot and other monster sightings as well. I mean, that's very Orson Welles' War of the Worlds-esque, right, where you have people seeing water towers and shooting at them, thinking that they are these tripod alien invaders, things that they've been seeing for years. And it's a kind of a there is mass hysteria that happen. And that's happened with Bigfoot sightings, where you've had classic processions of armed locals trying to hunt down creatures that have been seen in the area and then shooting at people they know or somebody just moving around in the woods. There's stuff like that has happened. And I don't think that, and that again comes to the question of is that cause and effect, or what is going on?
Tim, Alexander, Gene, you're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
Donald Trump warned America. The U.S. dollar is under attack, and it's becoming less and less valuable by the day. Hyperinflation and speculation is killing your retirement. Don't leave your money sitting in cash. It's time you diversified and protected your future with physical precious metals. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000 and get your free digital dollar survival kit and learn how you could get up to $1,000 in free silver today. Call Advantage Gold now at 800-900-8000 to get your free digital dollar survival kit. And you may qualify for $1,000 in free silver. Advantage Gold is the number one rated gold and silver company in America. Your future is precious. Protect it today when you call Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000 now.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Check with your financial advisor before investing.
That's 800-900-8000.
We depend on our drinking water supply daily, but where does that water come from? Your water provider encourages you to get to know your local water source so together we can protect and preserve it. The investments we make as a community to protect our water source now ensure we have a sustainable drinking water supply for the future. Visit drinktap.org to learn more. This message is brought to you by the American Water Works Association and your local water provider.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and people just like you that need affordable health insurance to get it. We have short and long-term health insurance plans, and some even cover dental, vision, and prescription drugs. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or now need affordable health insurance, call right now and learn for free how to get it. Listen, affordable health insurance plans for everyone just like you are a free phone call away. So give us a shout right now.
800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. That's 800-670-0946.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Back with Alexander, back with monsters. Tell us more.
Absolutely. In regards to these kind of examples of mass hysteria, whether or not they are really because there's more sightings or because maybe people are more comfortable with reporting their sightings. To relate this back to the Lake Champlain monster, you had in 1980 the publishing of the Sandra Mansky photo, which is that famous photo of kind of a head and neck sticking out of the water, not the one to be mistaken with Loch Ness, different one. It was on the front page of the New York Times. And as a result, in the early 80s, there was a big flap in chance sightings. Now, there may be two things going on here. There may be, yes, maybe more people were reporting their sightings because maybe they were more comfortable. Oh, finally, I can talk about my sighting I had in 1967. Now that CHAMP seems to be mainstream, I can talk about it. Or, on the other hand, which I think both are going on, by the way, you may have people, they see something unusual in the lake, maybe it was a bird from a distance, and that becomes a CHAMP because they're influenced by what they saw going on. So you have two things going on, right? There's actually a term in law enforcement that I've been told by some law enforcement buddies that talk about, they notice when there's a big blockbuster movie or a big cultural phenomena that happens, that will directly reflect in the reporting they get with police reports. You know, people say they saw something or say that a certain crime was depicted a certain way. There's an influence from certain popular media that seeps into culture, whether we like it or not, and the way people behave. So you have that as a factor as well. So when it comes to monsters, that may be part of it. I think a flap area like that is definitely a candidate for all of those possibilities. And another example is, so you've got a Bigfoot museum. You know, there's quite a few of them in the country at this point. Maybe a handful, and there's, you know, Cliff Berequin's Bigfoot Museum in the Mount Hood Wilderness area near Oregon. There's Bigfoot Museum in North Georgia. So places like that seem to have a lot of sightings. Now, people will say, well, that's because that maybe that means they're in a hot spot, or maybe it's because they're the only ones taking sightings. So you have a Bigfoot museum, you're naturally going to get more people coming to you telling you their stories because they're comfortable with it. They finally have an outlet to tell their story, so they're going to report it to you, whereas maybe 10 minutes from that location, there are no known sightings, but the habitat is very much the same. So you may have just as many sightings in an area, but no one to really collect them or get those reports. I think that the overlapping theme between flap areas and any of these monster stories is that we're dealing with people here, and you need people to have these sightings, whether they be UFOs or Sasquatch or whatever the case may be. We're dealing with people, so you're going to have a lot of anecdotal data and that sort of thing, and there can become a lot of headaches with that and a lot of ways of having to vet through things. As I mentioned, you have a lot of different things going on at one time.
I wonder if some of the so-called paranormal elements that surround some Sasquatch sightings could actually be the result of a natural ability of these creatures, like, as you referenced with the mountain gorillas, to be able to produce an infrared sound. Not infrared. You're going to have to tell me.
Infrasound,
which laboratory experiments with infrasound, people report, I think it was like a feeling of uneasiness, of being watched. Some people just suddenly felt scared out of their, you know, out of their skin, which is what a lot of people report with these Sasquatch sightings.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a possibility. As I talked about earlier, just knowing now, and this is fairly recent, like within the last couple of months that I read this literature about these scientists finding out that these gorillas can produce vocalizations that affect the behavior of female gorillas just by the volume and this infrasonic kind of thing going on there that we can't understand this. We can't even hear it with our own ears, right? Whereas other animals might. I mean, even infrasound with the storms and that sort of thing, you think about when animals, pets, escape places with hurricanes, they'll just run the other direction. It's because they can actually hear these frequencies and these kind of changes that we just simply, as humans, cannot. But we can be affected by them. That's the difference there. It's not like we are completely immune from its effects. As you mentioned, some of those studies have found people being very uneasy. People report a lot of times this feeling of being watched when it comes to Sasquatch. And I've had this happen to me once as well out in the woods, and hiking through an area that I've done some research in here in New Hampshire where there's a history of kind of strange activity, going with a friend of mine at night while I had not primed him at all, I had not told him, I just said, hey, come with me for a night hike. This was in 2020 during the kind of pandemic lockdown, so we were able to, you know, get out in the woods a lot because there wasn't a whole lot else to do. And I focused intensely on this one area near me. And out with this friend, and we're walking, and I got this unmistakable feeling I've only had a handful of times in all these years of being watched. And I'm thinking to myself, it's this eerie feeling like you can feel in the back of your neck. I don't know how to explain it. I thought in my own head, I thought, wow, we're being watched. And at that same moment, my friend out loud says, dude, I think we're being watched. I turned to him and said, what are you kidding me? How did you know I was thinking that? He said, dude, I don't know. I just have this very weird feeling. We keep walking along the trail, and then we proceed to hear what sounds like wood knocks and something breaking a tree in a swamp right across from us, and recorded it. And afterwards, I had a conversation with him, and he said, I don't know what that was, but that was really weird. I said, I've never experienced that. You know, what are you, a mind reader, right? So I don't know what's going on with that. I mean, that may just be again, infrasonic. I don't know. I really can't pretend to even know. I don't know enough about infrasound. I just find it interesting that, you know, for example, another encounter a friend of mine had in New Hampshire in the mountains while camping was seeing something rub its hand along the tent and then hearing this vocalization that he said he felt in his chest, and that it kind of it vibrated his chest. And that's something I've heard with a lot of other reports, people getting roared at. Another friend of mine who is a former state park a guy down in Massachusetts saw two Sasquatches in western Massachusetts, and one roared at him. He felt it. So whether or not that's maybe just feeling the volume of a roar that is very loud. I mean, you imagine something like a Sasquatch size-wise would probably have larger lung capacity than humans in terms of being able to produce audio. But then again, these gorillas, they can produce some sort of infrasonic vocalization. So it's intriguing. It's intriguing to say the least.
Wouldn't it be interesting to take these vocalizations and see if we can find specific word comparisons?
Yeah, I know that's been done to some extent with some of the Sierra Sound stuff. I'm not too familiar with it, but I know there was a guy, Scott Nelson, I think it was, who's a cryptolinguist who looked at claiming that there was some potential language in some of the Sierra sounds. I don't know how sound that is, but most of the vocalizations and stuff that's out there seems to be, you know, grunts, whoops, those kinds of things, those sorts of very animalistic noises. But some of the stuff, as I mentioned, from the Alaska property there that I've been to, it's almost like mumbling, and I've heard this reported with people who have had encounters where they say it sounds like somebody's either speaking gibberish or even like if you hear somebody who is some sort of mentally handicapped speaking, it's kind of like a strange sort of maybe strange dialect of something. That's kind of what it sounds. I've heard people report sounding like a foreign language, just something strange. Whether or not it's words, I don't know. That's the thing. We really have no way of knowing. I mean, we don't know what these things are, let alone what they're capable of. Do they have primitive culture? Are they solitary? Do they act like other creatures where maybe the males are solitary and that's why we have these sightings? I don't know.
We will try to find out more. Although there's a lot of guesswork involved there. Alexander, Gene, and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or injured at work, you have rights, and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good, they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. That's 800-509-4492.
News update. President Biden and First Lady Jill touring hurricane damage in the town of Live Oak, Florida, where massive trees are down and homes destroyed in the aftermath of Hurricane Idalia.
President Biden visited parts of Florida on Saturday that were devastated by Hurricane Idalia. Biden took an aerial tour and spoke in Live Oak, one of the towns in the process of recovering.
The spirit of this community is remarkable. When people are in real trouble, the most important thing you give them is hope. There's no hope like your neighbor walking across the street and see what they can do for you.
Tributes pouring in this Sunday morning as fans across the globe continue to pay tribute to the late Jimmy Buffett, who has passed away at the age of 76. Here's Key West Mayor Terry Johnson.
He projected our lifestyle to people from around the world, you know, live and let live.
TMZ reporting he was diagnosed with skin cancer 4 years ago that spread. This is USA News.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Have you ever watched a video on the internet and found yourself waiting for the skip the ad button? The reason this takes a few seconds is because the video delivery companies get to collect impression commission, and the viewer never sees the advertisement. The company still pays full price to run the ad. Does this sound like a scam to you? Is there any wonder why internet ads are so ineffective? For over 100 years, radio has been a proven source for companies' messages. Radio listeners are engaged and want to support the companies that sponsor the shows they're so passionate about. Simple companies like window treatments, security, pillow companies, and more have been able to break away from the big box stores, building multi-million dollar businesses. Find out what radio can do for your business. Call 877-996-4327. Or advertise at GCNLive.com. That's advertise at GCNLive.com.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So, we had to find out who's running for the leadership, the tribal leader of that particular race. Get involved in their politics.
Right. See, yeah, that's the thing. We don't know. We don't know if there are, what a lot of people theorize, is that perhaps a lot of these sightings that happen, they typically tend to be 6 to 8, 9 feet tall, right? And it's a male-like figure. There's very rare, I mean, they do happen. But they're not nearly as common as the solitary kind of male sightings, where you have sightings of juveniles or even females or more than one at a time. I've heard sightings of people seeing two or three at a time. Most of the time it's just one. So does that mean, let's say, for example, like a lot of species where you have a family group and then once a male comes to a certain age is then kicked from the group and is sent on his way to try and establish his own family? We know some apes do that sort of behavior. So is that what's going on, or are they always in family groups like we as humans mostly are? You have to remember, we're apes as well. As different as we are than any of the other apes, there's a big difference, but we're very similar in some aspects. We're social creatures. We live with our families or with partners our entire life, basically, in one capacity or another. But we also do that. Once you become a certain age, you leave your family group to start a new one and rinse and repeat. Is that also going on here? I mean, we really have no way of knowing. It's a good working theory, I suppose, but until we have some irrefutable proof that that's what's going on, all we have is a lot of anecdotal stories, and most of them tend to be of that single, lone, solitary male crossing the road, or maybe it's a juvenile having fun crossing the road to mess with humans, but there are other reports of encountering family groups. I just heard of a story as I was driving up to Alaska of a researcher from the Yukon who told me the story of these First Nations guys up there going fishing and hunting, and they heard a baby crying, and they came across a juvenile Sasquatch, and then a mother came along and picked it up and basically swam across the river to get away from the people. And that's not a very common type of sighting. So, yeah, there's just a lot of guesswork involved, I suppose.
I've often wondered about, at least so far, the lack of any kind of fossil evidence when it comes to Sasquatch type of creatures. Now, I know that some people have climbed onto the Gigantopithecus, but that was over, I think, in China, and I don't think there's been any evidence that anything like that had ever moved to North America, which makes me wonder, is the Sasquatch a fairly new species that has developed in a, you know, I mean, so, you know, so close to the human era of the world that fossils haven't had a chance to develop yet?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I'll use the Gigantopithecus for a point I'm going to make, but I don't believe that they're connected. I mean, there's theories that Gigantopithecus were kind of related to orangutans, modern orangutans. That seems to be more of the line of thinking of Gigantopithecus being related to orangutans, or perhaps being a predecessor to orangutans. That's a theory. But what's interesting is that the Gigantopithecus was the largest ape in history that we know of. And the only fossil evidence we have that it even exists are teeth and part of a jawbone. There's nothing else we have, which is you'd expect for such a large animal, right, that we'd have some sort of evidence. But I think the point is they live in an environment where fossilization is not great, right, in those kind of humid jungles of China and Southeast Asia, Thailand and Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam. That's kind of where the Gigantopithecus was. And if we look at gorillas and chimps, at least from the reading I've done, fossil evidence is very scant that they even exist, even though they've been around for a long time, as far as we know, right? But look at the environments they live in. They live in these, in the Congo, these rainforests, these jungles, these mountain rainforests in the Virunga and the Congo that just are not conducive for fossilization. And again, to bring it back to the Gigantopithecus, one of the only reasons we have some of those fossils is because they were discovered in caves. And they were being sold in Chinese apothecary markets in the 1930s and 40s before World War II as dragon medicine. You know, they would find these fossils, grind them up, and use them for kind of traditional Chinese medicinal purposes. That's when these European paleontologists were going around literally buying fossils from Chinese markets and discovering new species, including Gigantopithecus. Mm-hmm. And these bones were being found in caves, which required a specific circumstance. In the case of the Gigantopithecus, it's theorized that porcupines, which consume bones, were actually dragging bits of bones in. Maybe a Gigantopithecus died, and they would drag part of the skull in, and as a result, the teeth would be the only things left, and they happened to be in a great place for fossilization, which was inside of a cave, as opposed to being out in a bamboo forest, which would have been outside of the cave. So that example, I think, serves very intriguingly when you're talking about the Sasquatch conversation. Now, look at North America. Not great for fossilization. Where do we typically find fossils in North America? Places like Utah, drier parts of Montana, some of these sort of desert environments. That's where maybe at one point that was a forest, but where do the Sasquatch sightings tend to happen? The temperate rainforests of the Pacific Northwest all the way up to Alaska, the Rocky Mountain, the mountainous parts that get a lot of precipitation in terms of rain and snow, and the Appalachian Mountains, which are deciduous temperate forests. So you have situations that are not great for fossilization. So I don't think it's a surprise we haven't found any kind of Sasquatch evidence. No one's really going to the Ho Rainforest in Washington State and saying this is a great place to do an excavation and look for prehistoric fossils, right? That's just not really happening.
All right. Take that question that step further, and of course this is just speculation. What do you think they are. Do you think that we're dealing with a close cousin species of humans? Because so many sightings that people report, they say that these things look human. The face, there's something about the face. And I suppose, you know, being able to stand upright, they just get the impression that they are looking at a human. If somebody would run across the mountain gorilla, they would never say, that looks like a human. But with the Sasquatch, you always get a lot, even despite size, it looked human.
Well, I think what's interesting is some of the early reports of mountain gorillas, the natives talked about a man-like hairy creature that lived in the mountains, and that Europeans at the time didn't believe it. It sounded too far-fetched, but that's what it turned out to be. I think if you spend time looking at gorillas and chimps in the zoos, and you get this sort of really human-like appearance. You look into the eyes of an orangutan or a gorilla at the zoo, and it's like there's thought and reason going on there, as opposed to, say, looking at a white-tailed deer or some sort of a kind of less intelligent species. But I don't know what Sasquatch is. That's obviously the question we're all talking about. There's people that think it's a flesh-and-blood, undiscovered primate like a gorilla, or people that think it's some sort of a near-human kind of hominid-type or hominin species. Then there's people on the other side that say it's connected with UFOs. Some people say it's interdimensional. I mean, there's a lot of competing theories, right? I don't know which one's right. I think just based off of the little data and evidence we have, there's much more of a precedent for something like a hominin or a hominid to exist. If they've always been around, we're learning so much more about ancient species like this that we thought never existed previously all the time. I mean, we're talking about the Denisovans and to the Homo floresiensis in Indonesia, where you have stories to this day of the orang pendek, which is described as a small Sasquatch-type creature, not far from where they've discovered fossil evidence in caves, again, of a small type of people that were very small that may have been covered in hair. You have these interesting parallels. So the precedent is there, I think, more strongly for some sort of an undiscovered, closely related human-type creature. Not human necessarily, but something that's somewhere along the lines where maybe there's a kind of convergent evolution where these things have just adapted to live in the woods, kind of parallel to our world, I suppose. And, I mean, it's really only in the past couple hundred years that the world has become industrialized in the sense that we are everywhere now. Before humans, we had to live close to the coastlines, close to rivers, close to lakes for transportation and moving. It's a very recent phenomena that we have began to be able to fly around the world or get around the world as easily as we do. So I think in the past, these things would have had a much easier time staying hidden.
Hey, we've got more to come with Alexander, one more segment. And Gene and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis,
everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Youngevity for over 17 years, since before it was Youngevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Youngevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Youngevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Youngevity.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
It's obvious. We're being let down by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media are distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the real concerns of American families. Countries we're at odds with are hoarding food, financial systems are strained, and supply chains remain too fragile. We can tell something is coming, so we're preparing. Folks are getting into self-reliance and investing in emergency food storage. And My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, makes it easy for you to have peace of mind knowing you're prepared. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure some emergency food kits. There's a dozen to choose from that contain tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. And while you're there, stock up on water filtration, heirloom seeds, and emergency gear, too, at MyPatriotSupply.com. It's time to prepare today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Now, in all this, I think we all agree that eyewitness testimony is very inconsistent, even on things we recognize. So that being said, how much of what we know about these creatures is based on people just taking something and turning it into something that's weird?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer, so to speak, but so much of what we do have in terms of some of the reported behaviors and that sort of thing is definitely anecdotal, and it's coming from people just having an experience. And again, one of my favorite things is being able to look at, let's say, 50 sightings over the course of a couple decades in a particular region. You know, maybe it's one state or one national forest that stretches between a couple different states, and noticing patterns. You say, well, how many examples are there of people camping, just minding their own business, and having something happen to them, whether they're getting stuff thrown at them or physically seeing a creature, hearing wood knocks? I've kind of gone through and looked at some of that stuff, and it's interesting. Again, you start seeing patterns. You start seeing areas where it almost seems like it's geographically confined to certain areas, as opposed to being seen in places that would not be conducive for a physical creature, right? There is a lot of that. I mean, but a lot of it comes down to personal experiences. I think just some of the things I've had happen to myself have really made me wonder. Now, can I say they're all 100% Sasquatch? No, of course not. Once you start looking at those statistics and you say, okay, well, there's this many sightings or this many reports of this type of vocalization, you have something like that happen to you, and it kind of fits into that category of purported behavior, which, you know, again, I can't confirm, but I do find intriguing, especially when you kind of go through the possibilities of what it might not be. And you know, to the other creatures, you kind of do that process of elimination. You're left with the kind of conclusion as I have in a few cases of, well, gee, that fits the purported behavior of a Sasquatch, but without seeing it, I can't say with certainty, but there's not a whole lot of other possibilities. Not a lot of animals can throw rocks such distances and in the midst of other sounds, for example. I think what happens a lot of times in a lot of my investigations and a lot of times with this topic is that you end up coming out of it with more questions than answers. That seems to be the most consistent part of it.
That then raises the larger question. Will we forever be chasing after phantoms of the night or day and never come up with something solid to say, this is it, put in the history books, let's move on?
I sure hope so. I hope we're not still chasing our tails, so to speak. But I think, as I mentioned earlier, just it's really only the past 150 years, I would argue, that we as humans have lived the way we live. And even more recently, I mean, we've had cell phones and Wi-Fi technology publicly available for not that long. I mean, less than a full lifetime. I mean, just comparing from the 1990s when I was a kid to now, I mean, I carry around in my pocket a cell phone that has LiDAR technology that I can scan footprints with. In the 1990s, I would have had to carry out plaster with me and make a physical imprint. And that's less than 30 years difference, right? Just how imagine 20 years from now, right? So I think as the technology gets better, I think that the window is narrowing. The world, unfortunately, is going to be more known because we will be able to go to places and use Starlink in the middle of nowhere and have the ability to monitor things and communicate and set up a camera or something in a remote wilderness area that we wouldn't be able to have dreamed of in the past. So I think the world in that sense is getting narrower and narrower. But I think the difficulty at the moment is the technology just isn't quite there and that there's just too much space still out there. But who knows, with AI, we may be able to narrow that gap. It may lead to other frightening consequences for our species, but maybe there will be a few interesting discoveries along the way.
I have to think global warming, all this excessive extreme weather, is hurting the lifestyles of any of these creatures, should they exist.
Yeah, I mean, it would have to. You have not only potentially, you know, unrecognized species like Sasquatch, but all the other normal creatures that live, well, normal in the sense that ones that we know of that live in these environments are clearly feeling the impact of some kind of climatic shifting going on, and whether it be wildfires in Canada or even near the Patterson-Gimlin film site in Northern California. Just as of a few days ago, there was a fire raging not very far from that film site. The place where that Sierra sounds that we talked about, those recordings, that area that was there was burned. I mean, it no longer looks the way it would have looked when those recordings were made. So there'd have to be a shift in behavior or moving away. I've even talked to some folks out in Oregon and other places who talk about the wildfire seasons and how that's affecting some of the sightings in areas that completely go dead because that environment is dead and it's no longer a viable place for something like a Sasquatch, let alone ungulates and potential prey species to be hanging out in. There's a lot of things going on at the moment in the world in terms of the weather and just craziness. So it's going to have an effect inevitably on anything living in an area, whether it's kind of endemic to that area or not.
And unless they have a very advanced civilization that we are unaware of, they wouldn't even know what's happening to them, except that's happening.
Right. I mean, I think so many species that have existed in the world have just disappeared without even necessarily the humans knowing, have gone extinct in the past. Something so elusive, if this thing is a physical creature, to this point is still evading us in terms of being able to conclusively prove it. Maybe it could go extinct without us even knowing it in certain cases. I mean, I don't know. That's where the kind of the part of the mystery comes in. But if you lose an entire environment, you're going to lose basically all the species that live in that area. So that, I think, maybe provides an opportunity to study it for those kinds of purposes. But you would hope that it doesn't come to that, to that, be able to prove something is we're seeing the last of its kind being proved.
So what's your most recent video that you've released on YouTube?
So I've got quite a few videos coming out, quite a bit. You can check them out all on the Small Town Monsters YouTube channel. But the most recent one would have been the Alaska Bigfoot Highway. That was one of them. And then actually, as of recording this video on September 3rd, I will have another video coming out, which is part two of the investigation at that property I talked about called Area A on the Kenai Peninsula in Alaska. And then a few weeks after that, there will be another Alaska Bigfoot video. So I've got quite a few of them coming out, but the most recent one would be the Alaska Bigfoot Highway, which, as we talked about throughout the show, documents my travels up the Alaska Highway and all the great stories I heard along the way.
And the one after that's going to be what?
So the one after that will be Dark Coast, again, part two of that investigation. After that will be a video about Bigfoot stories from interior Alaska. So the very center part of Alaska, we went out there for a few days and got killed by some of the worst mosquitoes I've ever seen in my life. I mean, they're monsters in interior Alaska. You're in the deep in the boreal forest. So very different from those beautiful coastal rainforests at Area A. The boreal forest is no joke in the summertime.
But didn't somebody in Alaska once say, I could see Russia?
Well, they'd have to have really good vision to see that. I mean, Alaska, once you go to Alaska, you see how large that place is. You're a drop in the bucket compared to the landmass of Alaska. It's unreal, but it's one of the most beautiful places in the world for a reason.
So if we want to know more about the things you're up to, Alexander Petikoff, where can we check you out?
My website's a great place. It's got links to everything, including all the videos I've talked about, other works I've been involved with. It's Petikoff Media. That's P-E-T-A-K-O-V, media.com. Alternatively, if you search Small Town Monsters on Google or YouTube, inevitably you'll find some of my work, as I work for Small Town Monsters, and we are an independent production company that focuses on not only just Bigfoot, but other cryptids, Mothman, UFOs, all sorts of stuff. We've got a very wide array of interesting stuff. If you're into the weird, you'll find something you like.
We'll definitely check you out. Speaking of checking things out, you can find us on Threads, Twitter, or X, or whatever, if it doesn't become Y, or Facebook if you look for the Paracast, all right? I guess if I keep insulting X, Elon Musk will hear us and throw us out, and then we'll get all that publicity, which is really good. You can get branded merchandise for the Paracast at theparacast.shop. We give throw pillows and T-shirts and caps with four different logos to choose from, theparacast.shop or theparacast.store. We also offer our own streaming service, theparacast.plus, where you get more information. We offer this show without the network ads in better quality audio and the exclusive bonus After the Paracast podcast. Say that five times backwards. And we extend the show or do other things. For example, we're going to have Alexander back on After the Paracast this week. You never know what's going to happen next. You also get a 20% discount if you use the coupon code UFO20, UFO20, check out theparacast.plus, theparacast.plus. Alexander Petikoff, thank you for joining us on the Paracast.
Thank you, Gene Tim.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Chihibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.